This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. It is not often that a fictional book written many years ago becomes a prescient story for our current times. George Orwell's 1984 is one such book. Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale is another. Now, the online streaming service Hulu has produced a much-publicized televised version of The Handmaid's Tale, starring Elizabeth Moss, Samira Wiley, and Alexis Bledel. In our current political climate, where conservative lawmakers are prescribing nearly every aspect of women's health care and reproduction, and when a self-admitted sexual predator is in the White House, The Handmaid's Tale is a powerful warning against the dystopian future we could realize. Joining me to critique this new TV adaptation of Atwood's famed novel is Stephanie Abraham, our film critic and pop culture correspondent. She's a writer and media critic. She's helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift and was the founding editor of Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. And her review of The Handmaid's Tale has just appeared in Ms. Magazine. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. It's good to be here.
So, but before we get into your main critique of the TV show, what is your sort of overall impression? The posters that we've seen around, on billboards, etc., of this TV show are very, very ominous and quite frightening. Does it have that ominous sense, that feel of something incredibly scary?
Yes, absolutely. And I recommend watching it with a friend who will allow you to grab their arm and tell you when to stop covering your eyes. I'm not kidding you. It's very brutal, but that's because the story is very brutal. And they actually have done a tremendous job adapting the written story into what you see on screen. So red is omnipresent. It's in the very popular costumes that the women wear. It represents the fertility and blood, but it also represents, I would say, the brutality. And there is blood because there's torture that comes, when people resist the oppression. But visually, it's quite stunning. For example, there's a demonstration in the beginning before it goes so totalitarian, and the police start shooting, and the main characters are in a cafe hiding, and then the glass breaks, and you see in slow motion these tiny pieces of glass coming at you, and it really makes you feel like you're in it. It's visually very stunning, and it's also very stressful. It's very stressful.
All right, let's watch the trailer of the TV show that's been posted online so that those who are not familiar with Atwood's book can get a sense of the premise of the book and what this dystopian future is that she describes. Here's The Handmaid's Tale.
I was asleep before. That's how we let it happen. When they slaughtered Congress, we didn't wake up. When they blamed terrorists and suspended the Constitution, we didn't wake up then either. Now I'm awake. My name is Offred. I had another name.
Ladies, I have to let you go. It's the law now.
They needed to do it this way. All the bank accounts and the jobs all at the same time. Can you imagine the airports otherwise? Run, run, run!
You girls will serve the leaders and their barren wives. You will bear children for them.
There's an eye in your house.
We'll send you to the colonies. You'll be cleaning up toxic waste and then you'll die.
Celebration of Gilead and of what we have achieved.
We only wanted to make the world better.
Better?
Better never means better for everyone.
I want to keep on living for her.
Remember your scripture. Blessed are the meek.
And blessed are those who suffer for the cause of righteousness.
And that's the trailer of The Handmaid's Tale, the televised adaptation of Margaret Atwood's novel that she published decades ago. It's very, very stunning visually, as my guest and film critic, pop culture correspondent Stephanie Abraham was just saying. Stephanie, the hallmarks of a militarized future are also part of this. I mean, setting aside just the feminist, the sort of message of the TV show, you have a future where the Constitution has been completely trashed and that elected representatives have been killed off because they've just not considered important anymore. So is that one reason why this is so kind of, why this particular TV show is being released at this time and is so popular now? Is it clear to those watching that it's a commentary on the times we live in now?
Yes, everybody's commenting on that, and it's very easy to make those connections, especially given the current president. But they actually ordered this direct to series before it was looking anywhere near like Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. So this was ordered last year before that was known. They filmed the first part of the season before the election. Then they came back on set after the election, and the actors have commented in interviews that what they were doing just feels more kind of heavy and more real. So it's not really being lost on anyone that we could be just a few steps away from this. And actually, I think it's important to notice that this brutality is happening today in places in the U.S. and also certainly internationally. There's gay people are killed, women are being slut shamed. So I think that's actually one of the things that the series does really well, is shows how quickly that slippery slope is. From, you know, because when things start to shift, they get called sluts in a cafe when things are quote unquote normal.
That sort of transition, like, right? The series cuts between sort of the pre-revolution and then the post, the sort of dystopian future. So you see what life was like before all hell broke loose, and it looks eerily like what we have today.
Yeah, and certainly the environmental destruction, you know, so that's the premise of the book, is that there's so much environmental pollution, people can't get pregnant anymore or have healthy babies. And the few women who have been able to in the last 5 years since things started to go awry are then deemed handmaids. And they're the ones who are taken into captivity and forced to reproduce for the owning class. There are studies today that show that, you know, the current environmental problems are affecting sperm count and also affecting women's ability to get pregnant. So I don't think, you know, well, Margaret Atwood said everything in the book is real. She was writing it in Berlin before the wall fell in 1984 or so. It was published in 1985. And she didn't make up any of the torture. So she took it. She said to, I forget who interviewed her, she was like, clip, clip, clip. She had all of these news clippings all over her desk. And she just kind of incorporated all of those modern day problems into this story.
And of course, this idea that women are no more than vessels for bearing children is one that many members of the Republican Party in the US today, even if they don't come out and say it overtly through their actions and how they've legislated reproductive health care and their attempts to make abortion illegal, essentially reduce women to childbearing vessels.
Yeah, and they are actually saying it. Some Republican people in the Congress are saying, I think someone recently said, like, I know they think they have a right to their own body, but, and so it's, you know, it's, of course, tremendously problematic.
Right.
And that is the, I mean, one of the reasons why this story works so well and on screen is because there is such a quest. Because everybody's after the baby. Everyone wants a baby. And it's just a given that, of course, you want a baby, a new life. And then the people who are held in captivity, so the handmaids, for example, they want to have a baby too, because things kind of ease up. The oppression eases up temporarily if they're pregnant or have just given birth. Like, for example, they get to have ice cream or, you know, things that they are completely denied. But then they also are on the quest to be free. And so there's this real internal conflict. You know, Bruce Miller, the showrunner, said that that is the essential conflict of the story, is the main character played by Elizabeth Moss. Her name is Offred, or of Fred. So they take on the name of the commander because her commander, her owner, basically, is named Fred. It's the battle between who she is as June, which is the real human being that she is, and then Offred, who is this basically this performance she has to give in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And where does she stay awake? You know, I love the way that trailer starts. It's like, before we weren't awake, but now I am. And it's this tension of can they stay awake and not show it, because if they show it, then things happen, like they get lynched publicly, or, you know,
so the battle between wanting to free oneself, but also wanting to covet the small rewards of accepting one's oppression.
And trying to stay alive in very oppressive, you know, systems. Yeah. It does a tremendous job showing how mental illness can develop, because this woman comes in and she's like, hey, this is a loony bin. You know, she resists right away. And then she gets taken away and they cut out her eye because they say that women don't need sight in order to reproduce.
This is right. In Atwood's novel, the price you pay for speaking out is a loss of an eye. Yeah.
That's right. And then you see her kind of buy into the system more than anybody. And it's not clear if her mind is actually bought in or if she's pretending to. So, I mean, the oppression just breeds like crazy things happen to your mind, you know, yeah. Of course.
I want to talk about the issue of race, which you've written about in Ms. Magazine. The cast of the show is actually quite diverse, which is very nice to see. Samira Wiley, well-known now for her role in Orange is the New Black, plays a lead role in The Handmaid's Tale. She actually plays the character of the best friend of the Elizabeth Moss's character. But in the original novel, you point out that Margaret Atwood sort of took a shortcut on how race would figure and people of color would figure in this dystopian future. And then the show creators struggled with that, because if they had stayed true to her novel, it would have ended up being an all-white show, but one that would have showed white supremacy in action. What did they end up doing?
Right. Yeah, that's a real tension. So she ends up saying in literally two sentences, she explains away where the people of color are, and they've been shipped off to what they call the colonies.
This is in the original book. Yeah.
In the book, where the radioactivity is supposed to be so terrible, they end up dying pretty quickly. And yet she capitalizes on the oppression of people of color, particularly Black people and enslaved Africans, because all of the tools of oppression that she shows were used first in the United States against enslaved Africans, particularly Black women, like being forced to reproduce. And then, you know, all of them having to take the name of their owners, all of these techniques, public lynchings. And so it's real off, and feminist writers have critiqued her for that. You know, it's just not right. And so Bruce Miller, who's the showrunner, he's kind of in charge of the TV show, recognized that you can't just have an all-white cast. I love that he recognized that. I wish more media makers would. But when he and Margaret Atwood, the writer, talked about it, she said, well, that will change everything. And so he wasn't able to change everything. So what ends up happening is, you know, it's wonderful to see women of color on screen. And Offred's best friend, Samina plays a tremendous role. She's, when Offred says like, oh, they can't do that, she just keeps saying, well, they're doing it, you know? And I feel like that's a lot of the tension happening in real life today. Like, they can't do that. I'm like, well, watch them. That's what they're doing.
And women of color are often the sort of, you know, the ones who point out.
Right. Because she's kind they of the see one of, the like, oppression take more those clearly. Rose-colored glasses off. The Constitution means nothing now, you know? So, yeah. And so it's good to see that, but what ends up happening is kind of this weird, ambivalent, colorblind society where some handmaids are women of color. They seem like maybe light-skinned Black women or Latinas. It's not kind of clear. I haven't seen any wives. So the wives of the commanders are called wives. And there must be wives of color if there's handmaids of color. But as a result, like, it's just kind of taken away the racism of the society, which you're, even though the white people are in charge, most of the commanders are white. I mean, I haven't seen any other, you know, people of color. So it makes whiteness the default, which is part of the problem with racism. And it also eliminates any ability to critique the racism in the story. Hmm. But I really respect Bruce Miller. He said, like, what's the difference between making a story about a white supremacist society or making a racist story, right? Because if you're only showing the white people, that ends up being racist. And then he said, why would we tell Offred's story and not tell the story of the people in Nebraska? And I think actually that's the challenge, is we need to start telling the stories of the people of color who was shipped off to Nebraska.
And in the book that the TV show is based on, as you point out, Margaret Atwood sort of just mentions that these people, the people of color in this dystopian future, are shipped off. Could they not have had a TV show where they showed the white supremacy in action with all the handmaids being white, but also in parallel told a news story of what was happening,
That's
a story
it.
That Atwood didn't tell, of the people of color shipped off and as they fought their own resistance battles to be freed from what they were experiencing? I mean, that might have been a more accurate or one that reflected more accurately not just the sexism but the racism that can be taken too far.
It would also be a story that had more integrity, right? Like, we have to tell all of the stories. You can't just tell the story of the owning class or the story of the white people. So they've ordered 10 episodes of this show. I really hope that it gets renewed and they do another season and that they start to incorporate that. The goal of this one was to adapt the book. And so that would require more storytelling. They have to invent it because we don't know what's happening in the Midwest. You know, they make it out to be some terrible, like, just radioactivity all over. But it would be more interesting because maybe that's not even happening. I mean, maybe they're you know, having a party over there. Of course, they wouldn't be. But the point is that that story needs to be told. It needs to be invented.
Well, the show's first few episodes are already out on Hulu, and then forthcoming episodes, I believe, are out every Wednesday. So we will certainly see how it plays out. Where can people read the review that you wrote?
They can go to MizMagazine.com, and then there's a click for the blog, and click on the blog. It's called What's Not Being Said About The Handmaid's Tale.
Well, Stephanie, as always, thank you so much for joining us. We'll have you back on to talk about more films and TV shows coming out. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Stephanie Abraham, writer and media critic. She helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift, was also founding editor of the feminist magazine Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, Bitch Magazine, and Ms. Magazine. We've been talking about The Handmaid's Tale. She's also the pop culture correspondent and film critic for this program. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.